You know, there's a tendency today for people to buy exercise equipment, oftentimes at Christmas, and then sell it on eBay in the next month or two. Sometimes you see them brand new, I mean, never been used. But my daughter-in-law is an exception. She tried out a friend's Peloton a year ago and thought, well, this would be a nice birthday present, a really nice birthday present. And Anthony thought it was a great idea if she would use it. You know, that's the key, if you're going to use it. And she has. She'll get up early in the morning and join in a strenuous bike ride with other Peloton riders, which makes the point to keep an exercise or diet program going, we need encouragement. We need commitment. Well, today we will see Hezekiah's commitment to revival and all he did to encourage revival. And this will complete our study of this wonderful revival described in three chapters here in the book of 2 Chronicles 29, 30, and 31. Lord willing, next week we'll look at chapter 32. But really, if you want to see what a godly leader looks like, all you have to do is study the life of Hezekiah. Now, in chapter 29, Hezekiah's revival started with the consecration of the temple and the people to the Lord and his service, which was then followed by the cleansing and restoring of the temple for worship. And with the temple cleansed and refurbished, Hezekiah quickly moved to reinstate temple sacrifices. And all of this spiritual progress called for a great celebration in Judah, which included offerings and worship. But Hezekiah knew that for Judah's revival to be continued, they must demonstrate further commitment to the law of Moses, which required God's people to come to Jerusalem every year to observe three major Jewish feasts. And included in the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which was one of those feasts, was the Passover. If you were with us last week, that's what we studied. Well, after perhaps some 215 years of having really no celebration for the Passover, Hezekiah declared a great celebration of the Passover. And this Passover gathering was given to worship, to teaching, to fellowship, which brought about a unified nation and a restored relationship with the Lord, and great joy and gladness followed. You know, it's amazing when you do what's right, when your heart is tuned to sing God's grace, there's joy and rejoicing. But Hezekiah realized that for this revival to be ongoing, there needed to be the restoration of the temple services, which had lapsed when King Ahaz closed the temple doors. And so this final stage in Hezekiah's reforms, in other words, his revival, will be our focus this morning. We have 4 points in our outline, and point number one is Hezekiah encouraged revival with the reorganization and the support of the priests and Levites. And we see that in verses 2 and 3. Hezekiah did not want the recent Passover to be a one-time event. And so he followed it up by instituting practical measures that would ensure the continued performance of the temple services in accord with the orders and procedures established by King David. And you can see that in 1 Chronicles chapter 24. And in obedience to what was written in the law of the Lord. And then to prime the pump, Hezekiah generously gave a portion of his own substance to the offerings and the feast. Meaning, like David his father, Hezekiah led by example. Let me read verse 3 for you. And this is Hezekiah. He appointed also the king's portion of his substance. In other words, his share he willingly gave for the burnt offerings, to wit, for the morning and evening burnt offerings, and the burnt offerings for the Sabbath, and for the new moons, and for the set feasts, as it is written in the law of the Lord. Now, as we understand, to carry on proper divine worship necessitated support, and he made sure that he was of that company that did his part. You'll look back at chapter 30, verse 24. We see, in regards to the Passover, Hezekiah, king of Judah, did give to the congregation, notice, 1,000 bullocks, 7,000 sheep, and the princes to the congregation, 1,000 bullocks and 10,000 sheep. What a wonderful testimony it is when a king leads, encourages by example. And let me add to that, what a wonderful example and testimony and encouragement it is when a pastor can honestly say, "Do as I do in the service of the Lord." What I preach and teach to you to do in obedience to God, I am seeking to do every day by God's grace. I'm not just saying, "Do as I say." I want to lead. I want to encourage by example. Now we come to a second point, and that is Hezekiah encouraged revival with a reminder of God's command to tithe. And I think it's very fascinating that revival and tithing in the Old Testament went together. And in verse 4, we see the command. "Moreover, Hezekiah commanded the people that dwelt in Jerusalem to give the portion of the priests and the Levites that they might be encouraged in the law of the Lord." Now, this is noteworthy. Hezekiah did not present tithing as an option, but rather he presented it as a command for the people of Judah. And this mandate was given to fulfill their obligation under the law of Moses to support the priests, the Levites, through their tithes. And you can see that in Numbers chapter 18. In fact, in Numbers chapter 18, verse 21, and this is God speaking, it says, "I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel." Follow me here. God said, "I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel." In other words, the support of the Levites came from the tithes of the people. But those tithes were first given to the Lord, and then from the Lord, the tithes were distributed to the Levites. Again, God said, "I have given the children of Israel all the tithes in Israel." And so when an Israelite failed to give their tithes, they were not just robbing the Levites, they were robbing God. And we see God's pronouncing that in Malachi chapter 3, "Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee?" And what is God's response in tithes and in offerings? Again, because God received the tithes from the giver, he then gave them back to the Levites. Now, the question Christians ask today, and I'm sure we have folk here who have asked that, I think it's a fair question. Is tithing a New Testament principle? Is tithing for this dispensation? Is tithing for this age of grace? Well, let me respond by saying, in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 through 4, we are told what our giving should look like. It should be freely given. You don't shame people into giving. And then it's to be generous. And then it has to be done cheerfully. And I think the idea is when giving is done freely and generously and cheerfully, you give not because you have to, but because you want to. That is New Testament giving. We give cheerfully, generously, and freely. Then raises the question, what constitutes being generous? What is meant by liberality? Well, for me personally, my benchmark begins at 10%. I feel that under grace, I can give at least 10%. Honestly, under law, they gave over 30%. So under grace, I mean, I can give at least 10% and hopefully more. I don't want my heart to say, how little can I give and still get by? I want to live out Christ's command in Luke chapter 6, verse 38, which says, give and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure you meet, in other words, with the same measure you give, it shall be measured to you in return. Which tells me giving is really a spiritual issue. It's not just a financial issue. For Christ said in Luke chapter 16, verse 11, if therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, in other words, in your handling of the money that God has entrusted to you, who will commit to you true riches? And so to recap what I'm trying to say, frankly, I'm wanting to lay up treasure in heaven where moth and rust do not corrupt and thieves do not break through and steal. For where my treasure is, there will my heart be also. And I've seen throughout my life that God honors those who do faithfully give. The righteous are not forsaken. His seed is not begging bread. And there is fruit that abounds to their account. Because they have sown bountifully, they will reap also bountifully. Honestly, I could spend the next half hour just telling you how God has taken care of Kay and me. We've sought to be a good steward of what God has entrusted to us. And He has honestly blessed us. And frankly, I want God to bless you. I want fruit to abound to your account. I think so often when a pastor speaks on giving, and you know, we don't beat that drum around here. But we've come to that study of the kings of Judah. And so I'm going to be faithful to preach from 2 Chronicles chapter 31. But I think too often we get defensive. Ladies and gentlemen, realize everything we have really does belong to God. He just loans it to us for this time. And He is saying, okay, what kind of steward are you going to be with what I entrust to you? And when He sees faithfulness, and I can speak from experience, when He sees faithfulness, He blesses. Now, what was the response of Judah to Hezekiah's command? I want you to notice verse 5. And as soon, don't miss that, as the commandment came abroad, the children of Israel brought in abundance the first fruits of corn and wine. In other words, they didn't say, well, if we have something left over, we'll bring it to God. We'll bring it to the temple. They brought the first fruits. God was the first one they honored. And oil and honey, and of all the increase of the field, and the tithe of all things brought they in abundantly. According to Numbers chapter 18, the first fruits were the priest's prerogative, but the tithe, whether of crops and fruit or of the herds, was presented to the Levites. And this support enabled these spiritual leaders to devote themselves, because God's people were faithful to give to God, and God was, through His instruments, were able then to communicate these tithes, these offerings, to the priests and the Levites, then they were able to devote themselves not to their secular jobs, so to speak, but to the law of the Lord. In other words, they did not have to be bivocational. Now, I realize there are numbers, many pastors who pastor small churches, and that's what has to happen. I mean, to support their family, they have to have a second job. But what a blessing when a church is able and willing to provide for their pastors so that they can give themselves totally to the law of the Lord. What was true then is certainly true now. And so I thank you for your faithful giving, which enables Pastor Beck and me to devote ourselves, as we read in Acts chapter 6, continually to prayer and the ministry of the word. Well, their liberality was so abundant, think about this, that it took 4 months to simply receive all the offerings. 4 months. And what came in was placed, as verse 7 tells us, in heaps of great masses. And as the distributions were then made, it was concluded, notice the second part of verse 10, since the people began to bring the offerings into the house of the Lord, we have had enough to eat and have left plenty, for the Lord hath blessed his people, and that which is left is this great store. God blessed his people. And Hezekiah and the princes' response, notice verse 8, and when Hezekiah and all the princes came and saw the heaps, they blessed the Lord and his people Israel. Now again, because of the unselfish generosity of the people, there was plenty for both the priests and the Levites. But it also showed that the Spirit of God, and I think this is primary, that the Spirit of God was working powerfully in the hearts and the lives of the people. And when I see your faithful and generous giving, not only will our needs there and our needs then will be met, but it declares that you and God are on the same page, that God's Spirit is at work. God's Spirit is at work. If you are struggling to give, then I would say, Lord, help me to be on your page. Help me to understand what you would have me to do. You know, God knows our needs, and he then impresses on us what we then need to give. Which brings us to our third point, and that is Hezekiah encouraged revival by distributing the tithes with integrity. Now, Hezekiah was wise enough to know that it was vitally important to properly administer the generous gifts of God's people, meaning Hezekiah wanted to make sure what was given was handled appropriately and honestly and rightly. In other words, those that then distributed the resources were men of integrity. By the way, that's not always true in churches today. And so he put men in positions of responsibility and accountability, put faithful men over these tithes. For example, Kononiah, Shemaiah, with their 10 assistants, were responsible for the storerooms. And Kore and his 6 assistants oversaw the distribution of the priests' cities. And I say, what a blessing to have honest and upright men to put in positions of responsibility. Friends, that's a gift from the Lord. And thankfully, here at Westside, we have those faithful men. Thank God for them. I thank God for our trustees, our deacons, and that's the way it should be. All of this abundant and equitable allocation enabled these religious leaders, as we see at the end of verse 18, then to sanctify themselves in holiness. In other words, again, they were able to devote themselves to the ministry of the word. Let me add, the details of all these names and the order of authority specified in these verses indicated the stability and prosperity of Hezekiah's reign. In other words, God honored the revival that was occurring in Judah. Which brings us to our last point, and that is Hezekiah encouraged revival. We've already mentioned this, but I want to mention it again, by his own obedience. Verse 20 and 21, and thus did Hezekiah throughout all Judah, and brought that which was good and right and truth, that word truth can mean faithful, before the Lord his God. And in every work that he began in the service of the house of God, and in the law, and in the commandments, to seek his God, he did with all his heart. Hezekiah's godly service to the Lord was marked by doing what was good, right, and true. And all of this work was done with all his heart. Do you serve God with all your heart? One author writes, Hezekiah finished his task because he sought God wholeheartedly. If you want to fight the good fight, finish the course and keep the faith as Paul did, as Hezekiah did, you serve God wholeheartedly. Another author writes, his is an example of intensity and urgency. In other words, there was that passion. There was that heart. I've got to serve the Lord. I've got to do so now. I've got to be faithful today. And surely Hezekiah was the fulfillment of Joshua chapter 1, verse 8, which says, "And this book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have what? Good success." And what do we read at the end of verse 21? He prospered. Friends, people who have a revived heart toward God prosper. Revival, experiencing life again in your walk with Christ, is marked by doing good, right, and true before the Lord. Revival is also characterized by a generous heart. And so let's review. Hezekiah encouraged revival in Judah in several ways. Number one, he committed to the reorganization and the support of the priests and Levites. Number two, he committed to Judah being obedient to God's command to tithe. And then number three, he was faithful in the distribution of the tithes and offerings with integrity. And then number four, he was committed to obeying God himself. And so I ask, what are you personally doing to encourage revival in your own heart, revival in your own family, revival in this local church? We all need Hezekiah's intensity and urgency in this culture of relativism and autonomy where each person is doing what is right in his own eyes. I have been appalled as I hear stories of different people who have been raised in good families, raised in good churches, doing what is right in their own eyes, listening to the lies of the world. The end thereof are the ways of death. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. The Bible and his moral system has not changed. It has and it will continue to be one man and one woman in marriage for life. And when you get away from that, God begins to judge. I personally feel God is judging our country right now. They're having a drought out west that they say is the worst drought they've had in 1,200 years. You know where a lot of our food comes from? Out west. You cannot stick your finger in God's eyes and say, "I will do what I want to do," and expect God not to judge. You cannot kill millions of babies every year and expect God not to judge. Friends, the church needs to be revived. Do you know that we set the table for what this nation then does? Churches, for the most part, are silent today. Friends, God is real. And we need to understand that only as we follow his path of life can we expect his blessings and not his judgment. I mean, I love America. And I see how many of our leaders have just turned their backs on God's moral system. And so, what are we doing? Let me encourage you, join with me to pray for personal revival. for hearts to cheerfully give to the work of the Lord, and that we will seek to do what is good and right before God, and the blessing that our souls will prosper. You know, you can have all the money in the bank. You can have houses and lands and everything, but if you don't have a soul that's prospering, you are dying. I want your soul to prosper. I want your walk with God to be real. I want Jesus to be the most precious person in your life. And that when you get up in the morning and you say, Lord, thank you for letting me see this day. Thank you for life. I give my minutes, my hours, my day to you. Our souls will prosper, our families and churches will then prosper, and our nation will then prosper.